Atheist Nomads, episode 207, Battle for the Net.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
I am Dustin, and joining me is Lauren.
Hi, Dustin.
Hi, Lauren.
And formerly Boise's funniest person.
Well, that was in 2015. It's the future.
Still funniest
now.
Person
2015,
I know.
Boise's funniest person, Mikey Pullman.
Mikey Pullman!
Hi, guys. I know. I run the local atheist comedy show.
And we also, of course, have Rocco.
Hi, Rocco.
Rocco is excited because there's somebody here who loves chihuahuas.
I do. I have two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to eat. They're so cute. They're very tiny. You can throw them in the air. You know, I love that they're just smart enough to figure out something's going on, but they never know what it is.
Yeah.
They're like, I want to be a part of it.
Or I want to be away from it.
Or both.
Oh man.
All right. And Mikey has been on twice before. Most recently it was in December for War on Christmas.
Oh, that was fun. That was a fun episode. Yeah.
That was good.
That was
and
fun
then
things,
the
guys.
First time was I think we were trying to do video or something.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was
yeah,
in the, yeah. That didn't work out. That did not pan out, but
no.
It was a good experiment.
Yeah,
I like it. Trying new stuff.
How are you holding up in this heat?
I'm a chunky ginger. We're not really designed for
chunky ginger. Sounds like a delicious snack.
It is.
Oh, now. I left the fan on. Whoops.
Oh goodness.
I was kind of hoping you wouldn't notice
Let's start over.
No, the noise gate will grab it.
Okay, so I turned down the fan now.
Chunky ginger. I'm still stuck.
You're
going to
be
that.
Editing a lot of this first part, aren't you?
Oh,
it should
yes.
be a Cheetos.
I will be editing all of the first part.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
Cheetos flavor.
I like it.
He said chunky, not crunchy.
I can do both.
Be chunky.
Oh, man. But yeah, it is hot. We're recording it. Well, okay, it's 3:50 now.
Yeah.
But when we picked up Mikey, it was already hitting 100.
Yeah, it was 100 degrees.
And it's only going to rise from here.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I think they were guessing about 104.
Yeah, that's really gross.
And then depending on where you're at, it can feel as hot as 114, such as in a car or...
On the asphalt.
The asphalt
or outside,
yeah.
So no taking puppies out for walks because
no, those chihuahuas overheat anyway.
Well,
so
they'll burn their
sunbathes.
Okay, crazy animal.
Yeah, 100 degrees. He'll go outside and sunbathe.
That's admirable. What about the corgi?
Corgi is a little bit more sensitive to the heat, but even him in the mornings will go out when it's like 90 degrees and
just
chill.
Pant. Yeah, I love dogs.
All right, let's go ahead and okay, I'm gonna do a little rant before the dusting off the degree, which of course is usually a rant anyway. This episode is going up on July 11, the day before the July 12 Battle for the Net. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday, that is today. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, then well, just wait tomorrow. Basically, every major company on the internet is participating, and the whole point of it is to fight to save the internet from cable companies, because the cable companies now have one of their own. Literally, he was a Comcast lobbyist, and that was his qualification to become the FCC chairman, and they are going to rule... Most likely, since they've already proposed the rule, that ISPs are not Title II...
For usage, right?
Consumer protections.
Oh,
they are
yeah.
not Title II utilities, and that will allow cable companies and ISPs to be able to charge you for the bandwidth for specific things.
How is access to the internet not a utility? It is a utility, right?
The general concept with public utilities is you only have one. And you have protections because there is a state-granted monopoly.
Yeah.
Now, with ISPs, you usually have two.
Which, if you're lucky.
When you have two,
right.
That is not competition. That is usually anti-competitive practices. And then as soon as they have all of the control... They do whatever they can to milk as much money as they can.
Looking at you, CenturyLink and Cable One.
CenturyLink is garbage.
Oh, they are everywhere.
Well, so is Cable One.
Yeah, they're also garbage.
I want my internet.
One is flaming garbage. One is wet garbage.
Yeah. Oh,
garbage.
Which is worse, you know?
Where this is going to go is if a cable company, we'll use our example, Cable One,
mm-hmm.
decides that Netflix is eating into their profits, they can either charge Netflix for access to their tubes, or
tubes or wires.
More likely, charge them and the consumer who is getting it. So if you want Netflix, you have to pay extra money to get that. And that is bullshit.
Well, they'll probably do more data caps, too. So streamers
naturally,
and gamers,
data caps are, that's like been the name of the game one. Since the beginning.
Yeah.
And those are still legal. They might crack down on them a little bit more since they're all basically established in federal law anyway as recommended guidelines. But it's all just recommended. And so if this goes through, access to this podcast could potentially go away or at least get really shitty.
Which would suck for us.
It would, yeah.
A little bit.
This is kind of, this is what Dustin does.
Yeah. Yeah.
That and Civ 5.
Oh, that has been so much fun.
Yeah, Civilization is a rabbit hole, man.
Oh, the one that I have been happily going into for many, 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 many years.
It's funny what captures you, isn't it? Just running your little Civilization.
I miss my World of Warcraft.
I started with Civilization 2.
I think I'm in early 2. I'm not much of a micromanager. That's the problem. I did okay with Age of Empires. We do a little RTS and a little bit more action.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, like I could never play Risk.
Risk is
Settlers
dumb.
Of Catan. I just suck at it. I don't know how to strategize. Dustin's over here going, oh man, I'm kicking Germany's ass, but France is more advanced than I thought it was. Oh, I don't know. Just nuke them all.
I conquered them all.
Yeah, of course you did.
Yeah. This is my first game of Civilization 5. And yes, I know Civilization 6 is out there. I would need a better graphics card probably to play it. Civilization 5 is perfect for my 6-year-old computer.
Yeah.
And I had never played it, so yay. And for the dusting off the degree, what I want to talk about is, because this time of year, next week is going to be, on the day of recording next week, will be the 10th anniversary of me leaving religion.
Oh, wow.
So
congratulations.
Thank you.
Insert party noisemaker sound.
So I...
I don't know, just a noise.
So in July, I have a tendency to think about a little bit more than usual about how that process went for me.
Right.
And one of the biggest things that this is one of those topics. And I know I've been kind of shifting from with these segments of atheists or Christians are bad, they're stupid, to atheists be nicer. This is going to be kind of one of those because cognitive dissonance is a huge, terrible thing.
Right.
And it's not uncommon for atheists and skeptics to berate people who are in the middle of cognitive dissonance because if you have it, you must be an idiot, right?
Just make that final step and just get it over with.
It takes people time. It took me 5 years.
Oh, yeah, it takes forever. It takes, I think especially like those of us that came out before the information age, technically like the, you know, all the social media stuff. It's a very lonely process, and I assume it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I first decided to stop believing, I had to make deals with myself, and you had to think about, well, what would I do? Could I still do a deathbed confession? Like, you have to unpack everything. Like, I can't imagine, like, yeah, I'm sure there's instances where people just wake up one day and is like, oh, I guess I haven't believed forever, so I'm cool. But most of us are like, oh, yeah, no, maybe, I don't know, it took me a while. I was technically an adult. I think I was 19 or 20, like... I don't think everyone gets it at the same time or when they do.
I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but at the same time, I wish it on everybody.
Yeah.
You kind of have to go... I've never gone through it. I've always been an atheist ever since I can remember.
Congratulations.
Ever since I was a wee little child. Questioning under God on the Pledge of Allegiance in first grade. I was just like, no, this is bullshit.
Now, I'm a bit crazier in certain ways than a lot of people. So for me, I had to have a new, fully formed worldview before I was willing to leave the one that I was operating under.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued to live and act like a almost perfect Adventist.
No halvesies for you.
To be an actual perfect
that
Adventist,
makes sense, though.
You have to be vegetarian. The almost perfect Adventists eat silly, at least clean meats.
Wait, what's a clean meat?
Those are the ones that are clean according to Leviticus chapter
not
11.
Shells or
so
pork.
No shellfish, no pork, no dog, but for real world uses, yeah, no shellfish or arthropods, no pork.
Oh, damn. I love bacon.
No bacon. I love pork. I think it's my favorite meat.
It's pretty good.
But with going through that process, I continue to live like I was a good Adventist, mm-hmm. and I continue to talk to people like I was. I remember spring break road trip 2007 with a friend in the seminary, and we met up with a friend from college that we'd both studied theology with. He had gone over to the Foursquare Church, and I spent 45 minutes arguing with him that he went to the wrong church.
Oh, no.
This was March 2007. I wasn't sure if there was a God, and yet he was in the wrong church.
Well, I mean, yeah. I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. But for me, yeah, I had to have a new, fully formed worldview. I eventually reached the point when I finally called it quits that the cognitive dissonance had gotten so big. I hadn't developed that new worldview. I had tried. I wrote a 45-page document outlining a new deistic theology that I was going to try to work off of.
That's what crazy people do.
Type
yeah.
A.
Yeah, I love it, though. At least you're organized.
Right. And while writing that, I heard my first tornado siren. And I wondered why they were doing a civil defense drill.
That's so funny. I think I like a lot of type B people. I was emotionally driven into atheism. I just stopped believing, and then my brain caught up later. Like, because I was such a passionate believer growing up, and I was involved in things, at admission trips, and mm-hmm. I was on worship teams and choirs. And then, like, through the process of getting married really young, and then just life in general wears you down. And just other things I've written about, like, it just got to the point where I had to recognize my lack of belief and then deal with that, mm-hmm. as opposed to intellectually non-believing. And I really feel like I stopped believing before I realized I didn't believe anymore.
Very few people, right. I think, yeah. start out with the intellectual saying, oh, well, this is why it doesn't make yeah. sense. No, like, well, dissonance. It's almost always yeah. emotional first. You either are angry or sad or something at the religion that failed you or something, and then the intellect rolls in later when you start reading, when you start hooking up with other atheists and start talking, and then the intellect kind of chimes
in. Yeah, because I had examples, for instance, the whole faith of a mustard seed, you could tell a mountain to jump into the ocean kind of a thing. And I, since I was such an active, real believer, it was difficult for me because I knew I had faith, but there's no way you could tell a mountain to jump into the ocean. Like, that was just a thing that you can't do.
Right.
Like, and I knew I believed, but I knew no matter what I did, no mountain's going to get up and just jump. Like, right. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Unless it's a volcano.
Now, yeah, but it was going to do that before.
Old school leaving religion, emotion coming first, intellect following, was the norm.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at the numbers, in most cases, it's emotions only. And the intellect never follows. Those are the people who just backslide.
Yeah, those are the people who end up going back saying, oh, I can't believe I was atheist, and here's why.
Well, those usually aren't the people that actually make it to atheists. They just stop going to church.
Yeah, they're
sure
functional,
do love to blog about it.
Well, they're functional atheists, as I call them. It's right. Like, you're an atheist in everything except your admittance that you're an atheist. There's no way that you believe in a judgmental, angry God, and you're just going to ignore him. Like, you don't do both of those
things.
But they
can't right. quite make that last.
Like, it's hard.
Somebody who still claims to be a Mormon, but goes out drinking on the weekend.
Yeah, like, they're a Mormon if they're asked if they're Mormon. This is why I don't believe the religious things when people, because not only when we interview people or we do statistics to find out how many churchgoers, mm-hmm. Most people don't go to church. Even yeah. if most people say they're Christian in this country, they're not doing Christian things. They certainly don't vote like it. They're just going along with, you know, what their society and culture tells them they should do.
As of 2006, when I was in the seminary, I learned in class that, according to recent polls at that time that are now over a decade old, I think it was 25% of Americans, 20% of Americans would actually be attending any church on a given weekend.
Yeah.
Or any religious meeting on a given weekend. 1 in 5. That means 80% aren't going. Now, some are just going to be missing that week, but you have a lot of your Christmas and Easter Christians.
Oh, or yeah. A lot of people who don't even do that. They are really firm evangelical believers who will not step into church because they don't believe in the church doctrine necessarily.
Or they're upset
almost more
about
annoying.
Something. Because they fight
really
hard.
You can't pin them on anything.
Because they have to convince you that they are a Christian. And it's harder to convince somebody that you're a Christian if you don't attend church.
Well, faith without works is dead.
Right.
I mean, I was so deep into this stuff. Yep. I was really good at talking to these guys when I was in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine. Like, I just think that if you can cherry pick from religions like Christianity, you know, the old idea, like you can be a believer. It's not like Paul didn't start off belonging to the church. He reinvented all of Christianity into what he wanted it to be. So at a certain point, he wasn't part of the religion. And then he was all of the religion.
I actually favor the view that Paul created Christianity.
I think he created what Christianity was for a long
time.
There
was a kind of a proto-Christianity that was... even if you look at...
I just imagine this little embryo going...
A conservative viewpoint of it. What Paul found was a sect of Judaism.
Right. And that's how it was seen, actually. Yeah.
He turned it into a religion.
Yeah, he absolutely did. Him and the Romans.
But with emotion coming before intellect, there are a lot of people, especially in the, quote, new atheists, which is a term that has fortunately gone out of use.
I really like. It's very ominous.
Yeah.
We're the new atheists.
Well, and what was funny was...
Yes, with the TV announcer or the movie announcer voice.
In a world, one atheist...
My God.
I was totally a new atheist in every way except for the way I became an atheist.
So what does that mean, new atheism?
Those were supposed to be the people who were very excited about their lack of belief in finding community and forming communities, and they were all inspired by the writings of the Four Horsemen.
Gross.
Not me. I was already... Well, okay, I consider myself a deist when I first read The End of Faith, and that was the first of the... new atheist books that I read. I got to atheism the old school way of studying religion and believing it to be bullshit. What ended up being weird for me was my intellect was ahead of the emotion. My emotion told me this is too scary to leave. I need to stay, while my intellect kept saying, leave, this is bullshit.
How does this correlate to your experiences in the rest of your life, though? Like, do you find this is a pattern that you have? Like, you just leave things intellectually first? Like, in previous relationships, did you leave intellectually before emotionally? Because everyone else usually does it the other way, that way, too. Like, you leave your relationship before you go, I should break up with this person. I'm just curious, like, if it's a personality trait.
It is totally a personality. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he'll admit it, but totally a personality trait.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong or bad.
And the greater the significance, the longer it takes for my emotion to catch up.
That's fair. And we're all constructed slightly differently.
He has to look at something from every possible angle.
Yep.
And then rehash it. And then rethink it again.
It seems intentional.
Very.
It gets to where it's brutally calculated. And that's just before I can take... And part of it is the emotional risk is too high.
Mm-hmm.
So before I can take that emotional risk, because I am actually a very sensitive person.
Right.
I have to make sure it's actually worth that risk.
That's fair. Yeah, protecting yourself seems instinctual.
And so I go through every possible way that it could ever go. And, oh, man. Yeah.
See, I have zero
with
impulse control.
Beer.
Yeah, I have no impulse control. I'd be like, fuck you, religion. I'm out.
I'm just done now. I'm kind of the opposite. I'm just like, let's jump into this head first.
Yeah.
I was in pretty deep. Like, I heard the voice of God, and I was, like, I was just really, really involved. I went to church several times a week. My friends and I were very religious. It was a very tight-knit cultural thing for me. You know, like, there were things that happened. I also have some crazy Christian stuff in my church and growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I already knew that there were any facets of Christianity, which I think assisted me in realizing that if you've been to 20 churches and 19 of them are wrong, well, the 20th one statistically is probably wrong as well.
Right.
Like, I think if you're a reasonably intelligent person, you just kind of catch up to that. And then, like, in high school, I was homeschooled. My parents made the mistake of letting me choosing logic. Once again, personality trait.
Okay.
I was just this thing I wanted to study.
Yeah.
Even as a homeschooler, I'm like, well, it makes sense to learn how to think better.
Yeah.
And my parents got it for me because why wouldn't you encourage your high school student to learn how to think better?
Mm-hmm.
And once you start to learn logic, that becomes part of your brain and the way you think. And nobody's perfect at it. But then you just start applying that to the rest of your life. So when I got to the point where I would think in my early 20s, late teens, like 19, that I would hear the voice of God, there was a rational voice I had constructed within me, mm-hmm. which was now combating that with, or this. So like, because when you're young and you're in the faith, you're like, well, this is the way that it is. It's very linear. And then later it was like, or, and eventually the ors kind of won out, because once you hear the voice of God and those things don't come true, you challenge the voice of God.
Yeah.
Well, I did. My dad believed that God told him the world was going to end in Y2K and it didn't happen. And he apparently is still a Christian.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he's dealing with. I don't talk to him right now.
All right.
You know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we should be nice to people who are in process. However long it takes.
Hold their hands.
The more somebody holds conflicting views, the more pain they are likely in.
Right.
Because it is a painful process. And yes, you should challenge adjacent views to that. Don't jump, take big jumps. Like, there was a point in time when I honestly believed, and this was freshman year of college, I honestly believed that the sun, moon, and stars, the entire universe, was 6,000 years old.
I know, right? And then you start to rationalize it, like, well, the light would have been created on the way to Earth, so you can have both the science uh-huh. worldview and the religious one. But yeah, that kind of stuff is weird.
Making the move from everything was created 6,000 years ago to, okay, the Earth was here earlier, to the Big Bang, those were all relatively connected adjacent views, and I was able to shift all of that to going from everything in the universe is 6,000 years old to the universe has been here for 14.37 billion years, and now the number has changed, and I think it's now 14.7 billion, and the Earth is 4.3 billion years old, or whatever it is, about four
give
and
or take
half.
A few billion.
So about 14 and a half, four and a half. And that was a lifeless shell until God started creation. Getting to that point was quick. But if you had tried to tell me that evolution via natural selection was a thing and tried to push me on that, I would have pushed back and possibly lost the progress I'd made.
I think that cognitive dissonance is built into our culture. Like, for instance, in the original Fantasia, one of my favorite segments is the one of the creation of the world, and it shows the dinosaurs. I was a big dinosaur mm-hmm. kid, as a lot of boys are.
And I like the volcanoes.
At the time, volcanism is amazing, right?
Oh yeah.
But there was never really a reputable authority figure who ever came down and went like, well, that is fantasy. Even though the rest of the show is obviously mm-hmm. fantasy. This is the only part that they were like, this is our representation of the creation of the world. Because artists and scientists collaborated to the point to be like, no, we're just going to push the truth out. So like, even as a kid in the early 80s, I would open a book, and as old as the information was about dinosaurs, they never pretended they lived together.
Right.
And this is where the culture wars comes now, to where they're trying to influence people into thinking the opposite. But even in the 80s, when I was a kid, they were just laying it out for us and letting that plant, that seed of cognitive dissonance, grow on its own.
Yeah.
So I always think there's layers somewhere in there.
We even have it within the Cold War. We were the good guys, but we were doing all of the bad guy stuff.
No, we still do that.
And we still do. There is some serious cognitive dissonance with that.
Are we the baddies?
Are we the baddies? Yeah, that's such a good skit.
Yeah. Anyway, next week, for dusting off the degree, I will talk about the final days of me leaving religion.
The final days.
The story that I don't think I've told in all that much detail on this show.
To correct be continued. Wrong. To be continued.
So, yes, to be continued.
Long-term listeners, correct him if he's wrong.
I covered it a little bit on the first episode, but I hope nobody has listened to that at this point.
You should. See where you've grown.
See, we
cool.
need to rehash a bunch of those early episodes.
But this is now the time, and since we haven't recorded new bumpers, to remind you that Atheist Nomads is proudly sponsored by Archway Hosting. They bring you low-price, full-featured hosting solutions. You can find them at archwayhosting.com. That's A-R-C-H-W-A-Y hosting.com. And we have been using their service since early 2014.
They the bomb,
we've
as the
had
kids say.
Almost no service issues, and it has turned out all of those were our fault.
That's pretty good.
And they helped us fix it.
It's a good track record. That's really nice. Good track record.
They are good. If you're looking for a website, check them out. Seriously. And we're also brought to you by two fewer listeners like you.
Oh, that's okay. We kind of expected that to happen.
How do you guys predict that stuff?
Predict? We can't.
Well, you said you expected it.
Oh, we expect with a big change.
Mm-hmm.
Big certain change.
Certain losses.
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry.
Now let's go ahead and move on to news.
News, lots of this.
Native American and First People tribes, clans, and leaders from several U.S. states and Canada are suing the U.S. government over its decision to delist grizzly bears in the Yellowstone region from the Endangered Species Act. This decision will allow the states of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming to manage the grizzly populations outside of the park, opening up the possibility for hunting. The tribes are claiming that the bears are sacred to them, and allowing them to be hunted violates their religious freedom.
Oh. Well, I mean,
interesting choice that they'd made on the argument there, that it was a religious freedom.
Why do you think they did it that way?
Well, one, I think it's a throw dirt in the face of all the Christians that have been suing places for religious freedom.
Mm-hmm. I think more likely that works.
Yeah, and I think that this is probably the most likely to win to work.
There's the same reason we're pro-Satanists whenever the Satanists win, yeah. Even though, I mean, we know what they're doing. It's for the right cause. So
for the
who
right
cares?
Cause.
Now, in this case, I actually hope they lose.
Why?
Dun dun dun.
Fuck bears, right?
Not fuck bears. It is
bear fucker. Do you need assistance?
While we have there is the whole issue right now of having a little bit of difficulty trusting anything coming out of the Trump administration.
Oh, fair.
However, decisions on whether or not animal species are listed or delisted on the Endangered Species Act are all based on science. And I don't like the idea of anyone's religious beliefs being based or overriding science. Now, this is in light of the fact that I do think we should, as much as possible, be deferential to the wishes of the native tribes who we took almost all of their land from.
Yeah, we killed a bunch of them, too.
We slaughtered most of them.
Real dicks about it.
Way to bring it up again.
Every chance.
We have managed, ever since we stopped slaughtering them, we've managed to keep them in poverty, alcoholism, and drug addiction.
Oh, yeah, we're real dicks. Yeah.
We have seriously fucked these people over.
I agree.
So I feel bad about not bending over backwards to be nice to them. But like with the same things going on in Hawaii right now with Mauna Loa, the big mountain for the big island of Hawaii, mm-hmm. which they're wanting to put another observatory there. It's bogged down in court and will likely never be built in the U.S. It's probably going to go to the Andes because it's sacred and they don't want more traffic up there.
But if they have the option of going to the Andes, then why not? Which, unless they find a sacred area in the Andes, which is possible.
This is just another argument for one world government, really. Because if one mountain doesn't work, just build it somewhere else. It's for the good of everybody.
This is true.
The big concern, Mauna Loa is the best choice for it.
Yeah, sure.
Andes is a second best, in particular because it's easy to get to. Scientists can actually easily get there.
And it's close to population centers. You can fly almost all the way there. I'm just not comfortable. I think we should just give any of the First Nations whatever we can that isn't like 100%
First Nations,
unreasonable.
Not First People. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's fine.
I screwed up.
Nobody remembers everything. I'm just emotionally here so far on the left that I'm like, no, let's just let them keep it. I know it sucks, but I don't know. I'm not comfortable telling them that they can't have their property that we took from them.
But the bears,
if it works, I'm pro bear on this simply because bears are important and we should keep them until we can't help but save them anymore.
They're important, like, apex predators.
Right. So I feel like if the argument works, I'm more long view on this, although I agree with your reasoning. So, but we don't have another way to win this argument, do we?
So I want to start with the whole animal management thing.
Yeah. Okay, that's where I was going to go with it.
Okay. For starters, wolves are the better example than grizzlies because they are actually already being hunted.
Yeah.
They set what is the maximum amount of wolf population to keep big game animals moving. You want to keep the elk, moose, and deer moving because that is really good for the ecosystem.
Yeah, but good for the plants.
You don't want enough that they get hungry and they start going after livestock. Because if you have angry farmers in Idaho, you're fucked.
Or Wyoming. Right. Or Montana. Wyoming,
or, yeah.
They're just anywhere in this range.
Any of these states. What they weren't counting on was the wolves spreading. And there are now healthy wolf populations in several mountain ranges in Oregon and in Northern California.
Right.
That was not part of the plan.
Yeah, they thought they could control nature. I've seen Jurassic Park. That was a horrible idea.
Yeah, that wasn't supposed to happen. And with grizzlies, they're only wanting them in these three states. They also don't want them attacking livestock. So you need to be able to keep the population under control.
Now, don't we pay people for livestock taken by these predators? Like, isn't that just a small, small amount of the federal budget?
We do, yes.
Like, I mean, it sucks that your lamb was killed, but the lamb doesn't belong there. The wolf does. So here's your money, and I'm sorry.
The bigger,
like, why is
that
a problem?
That's kind of where I'm at, but that's not how the world works.
I mean, and it's not. I'm from Idaho too. Yeah, I mean, I know that, but why can't we approach it like that?
Because they'd rather prevent the deaths of that livestock than pay for incidents.
No, it's they'd rather avoid the anger of most of
voters.
The state.
You, the rural people, yeah.
Yeah. And it's even bigger than just that. If you allow the population to balloon, the game animals population will collapse, they will get hungry, and they won't stop at livestock.
Right.
They will start encroaching on towns, and they will start eating pets.
Because
wolves have never done that.
Scavengers.
When wolves had all of the world to live in, they still stayed away from people and fire.
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's a very few incidences, except when we are in their territory in the middle of the winter, where we're even an option for them.
Right. But it's all of these fears are why they need to keep the populations in check.
Yeah.
And so they are engaging in management. So there's that whole angle.
Humans are so arrogant. We're going to control these
fearful.
Other species for what we think is best for everybody.
Another angle where this, I'm not comfortable with this, is the fact that, yes, we fucked over Native Americans and First Nations.
Right.
We need to do everything we can to undo some of that damage.
That would be great.
However, their wishes need to be taken into consideration. They should have a seat at the table, but I don't think they should be given the final say.
And I think that they weren't given a seat at the table, and this is their way of saying, hey, you guys should have consulted
us
on this.
That's fair. Yeah, because I don't really think they have any power in this situation at all. Like, you're only giving them those tools to use, so what else can they use? If we're not going to listen to any of the science on it, and it's all about, what, you know, whatever, then why not let the natives use their only weapon, which is, we have certain rights, you guys. I don't know.
Now, my bigger concern actually comes down to the precedent that this could create.
That's a good point.
Not specifically with Native Americans asking for things, but other groups. So if they can say killing grizzlies violates our religious freedom, how much of a step would it be for Muslims, Jews, or Adventists to object to the pork industry in an area where they have a large population?
Is this precedence or a slippery slope fallacy?
Precedence is slippery slope.
Yeah, it is, but precedence builds into things.
Slippery slope is only concerned with logical arguments, not with legal concerns. I was on the planning committee for the Northwest Freethought Conference.
Mm-hmm.
The final year, it didn't happen. I was one of the three votes to go ahead with the conference, despite not having enough attendees to be profitable. And my argument was, one had already been canceled before. If we cancel this one, confidence will be broken and there won't be enough people for it.
Fair.
And I got called out on making a slippery slope argument.
Were you right?
I was right.
Yeah, there you go.
It never happened again. And when you look at legal cases, anybody who said, okay, the Hobby Lobby ruling is going to make it so that more and more groups will be able to get out of paying for, well, providing insurance that covers contraceptives for women.
Right. I see where you're going with this now, and I actually am I'm more convinced that you're right. Keeping the religious argument out is probably better. But I still see why they would do that.
But I still see why they did it.
And, like, what else they got?
Right.
So I it's definitely one of those ones where I don't agree nor disagree. I think Dustin has a very good point, but when it comes to the Grizzlies, they really need to approach it more like the Wolves, with a bunch of biologists, zoologists, ecologists running things.
And that's the plan.
And don't leave it up to three different states shooting who knows how many animals to try and keep them under control in a region where they are an asset.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, oh my gosh, have you ever seen a bear jam in Yellowstone?
Yeah.
People eat that up. They love it.
And we were lucky that we weren't eaten in the one we saw.
No, it was at least 200 yards away. It was fine.
200 feet.
It's impressive to see an apex predator in real life because we're so sheltered from that.
Oh my gosh.
Even going
especially
to Yellowstone.
Especially when it has babies.
And you're like, oh, that's terrifying. That
oh,
is
we
the
could die here.
Scariest
okay.
thing. Like, a bear could just kill you for being too close to her cubs. Like, she's just being
and
careful.
We were definitely there, and it was awesome.
One of the biggest concerns that I do have with this is turning control over apex predators in particular to states is naive and ridiculous, because there isn't a static Idaho wolf population.
And I don't think there will be.
There's an Idaho, Montana, Oregon wolf population.
Right.
Oregon does not have a static population. It has a Idaho, California population. These should be, because they are multi-state in their ranges, they should be federally managed.
Absolutely. Yeah, because it crosses state boundaries.
Which is what the whole delisting
now
messes up.
There isn't any framework for federal management of animals unless they are listed on the Endangered Species Act. So we have a case of inadequate legislation to deal with the reintroduction of apex predators into the lower 48.
Believe me, if the guy had the government the way I wanted it, there would be a lot of scientists involved.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, here's the first question. Are the grizzly bears endangered still?
No. That's why they're being delisted.
Right.
Repopulating the region has been successful.
So even the argument itself isn't necessary.
They just don't want them being hunted.
I mean, I get that, but you're not going to stop it from happening at this point. If they're not endangered, you're really difficult. Like, your argument is they're still endangered? No, it's that we get to not. No, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody gets to own a species of animal. Like, I don't think that belongs to people. The closest we have are the feds. And if it's not, they're not endangered, they're not endangered. You can re-endanger them if we get out of control.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're in danger of losing grizzly bears.
No, it's all about who has the control of management. And it's either going to be federal or state. And making it state with three states in such close proximity to each other just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I think we've beat this one into the ground.
Yeah.
But with the new focus, I actually found this from a local news source.
Yeah.
KTVB out of Boise.
Good
and
for them.
The B in KTVB
not the most
is Boise.
Reputable source, but they're pretty good for local.
Yeah. And they don't have a paywall.
And they just, thank goodness.
I just don't think that if they're endangered, they should be endangered. I really am just going to go. I think that's basic science.
Yeah.
If they're not endangered, they shouldn't be endangered. And I'm sorry. I don't think it screws over anybody to keep them off the endangered list. And if they get close, we just fix that then.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll have more scientists then.
Now, the choice ends up being hunting or the state doing culling. And right now with wolves, we have a combination of the two happening.
Yeah, and it's totally working.
And what's
it actually is.
The crazy thing with Idaho, you have, when hunting is involved, the rednecks get behind conservation.
Okay, I that's a good argument.
They rednecks, hunters, sportsmen have saved more public lands in Idaho than any other group.
That's a cultural thing. This
it
part of the country
thing.
Is really good at that. I think that's simply because everyone I know that's involved in that, here in Idaho, that's a pretty big part of the population, has a vested interest in being able to do this with their children and grandchildren forever. And they don't want things to get out of hand. They want to be able to, they want their kids to be able to kill bears in the future. So they don't want to run out of bears.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, because that's exciting. I think, I'm not into it.
My grandpa, who thought all bears should die.
Right.
And if you don't get a tag, like right now, getting a bull elk tag or a moose tag is almost impossible.
Yeah, it's a
if you get it,
lottery.
It is a prize, and
you win. Yeah, go have
you're
fun.
You're lucky to actually get one, even if you get the tag.
Yeah.
Grizzly, I wouldn't be surprised if there's 10 or 20 tags a year, and it's a really competitive lottery, and half of them don't get a bear.
Yeah, I like the idea of just taking it all to bow hunting. Like, you can kill all these things, but good luck.
Good luck at surviving.
You can kill a bear with a knife. You can kill as many bears as you want, but it has to be a melee we'll weapon less than 2 feet knife. Long. And you gotta get up close and stab it.
Wrestle it.
Wrestle it to the ground. I mean, I'll even let you and your friends attack a bear with knives. That's fine.
Like, up to four people. Just go for it.
Two of you are gonna die, but you're gonna get a bear.
Utah has a bunch of new alcohol rules that are going to effect, including a 2% increase in the state's markup on beverages above 4% alcohol by volume.
4% alcohol by volume isn't alcohol by volume.
That is beer that can be sold in grocery stores and convenience stores.
Is that Zima?
I think Zima's at 6.
The biggest change, though, is that Zion curtains required in restaurants built since 2009 are no longer required.
You just explained to me what those were.
Oh, and I'll get there again.
Okay.
The rule has been that all drink pouring and drink mixing could not be visible to minors who might find alcohol culture or bartending glamorous.
Right.
Just now, the pay.
Now there needs to be a 10-foot buffer or 5-foot buffer with a half wall at least 3.5 feet tall between miners and the drinks. And why these frosted glass barriers were called Zion curtains? It's because Mormons are afraid of booze.
Thou shalt lead to temptation.
I don't think they're interested in anything that lowers inhibitions.
They want people inhibited.
We've seen Mormons with inhibitions gone, and it's look up how much porn they use.
Yep.
Oh yeah, we have those
it's
numbers.
It's not a pretty sight.
Highest in the country and kinkiest in the country.
That's super funny.
It is really funny.
Oh my god!
I recognize the Zion curtain from when I was in Salt Lake City a couple of years ago because we asked about it.
Yeah, what is that?
It's a frosted glass curtain.
So crazy!
And
around the bar area.
What blew my mind is that it's only been around since 2009.
Right, so this isn't...
This is recent?
This is a new enough thing that it only affects 8-year-old or younger restaurants.
It's so dumb.
So it was like, it was stupid. It was a stupid law that they put in, and they regret it.
And most of my time in Salt Lake was in 2008 and 2009. So other than the airport, where... I mean, last time that would have been 2013... I don't think I've ever seen this.
Well,
everything was
we should
older.
Fix that. What we should do is set up a an atheist podcasting convention in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Get
one,
all the
because,
West
you know, fuck the Mormons.
Groups.
And two, because it's easy access for people in the Intermountain West.
Yeah.
And go to a couple bars.
Now that they actually...
Polygamy Porter.
The least good beer
I know
there.
But it's such a good name.
Outer Darkness is much better.
Okay,
but the
nerd,
what's crazy is
beer nerd.
The last time I was actually in Salt Lake, you couldn't have bars. There was clubs.
The definition,
I actually,
a bar's bar.
I paid my membership fee for a one night membership to go to a bar that was in a hotel.
Sounds sleazy.
How much was it?
$10. It was a cover.
Yeah, okay. A rose by any other name.
And then they spent so much time, as soon as they found out I lived in Washington, spending as much time, like, everybody working there wanted to tell me about how terrible it was there.
Oh, yeah. I think you need to vent.
Yeah,
and Salt
they
Lake
really
City
did.
Has such an undercurrent of liberalism that those people just, they need to vent. They have to get it out there because everybody assumes Salt Lake City is super conservative and it's not.
No, it's liberal. It's
They have a great counterculture.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
It's some of the best. What was it? Dave? Was it Dave Chappelle? No, it was the other guy who used to go around at night to all the big cities.
Yeah, the Insomniac Tour. By,
the Insomniac
Tour. David Tell.
And he would go. He went out with the mayor of Salt Lake City and did shots at a gay bar.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Because that stuff's there.
Gay bars are pricey, though.
Well, Yeah. You're paying for the dressing.
No, I'm paying for the gays.
Speaking of which,
by any other name.
Speaking of which, the Texas Supreme Court unanimously ruled that same-sex couples are not inherently entitled to marriage benefits. Yes, they can get married, but the state has to define what that means. This ruling allows a lawsuit against Houston's insurance plans for married gay couples from before the Supreme Court ruling to go forward.
It's so messy.
It is messy. And didn't we just report on another state that did the opposite of this?
Yeah.
Which state was that?
So Missouri tried to...
Allowing same-sex
couples...
On the birth certificate.
Getting on the birth certificate, yeah. And they lost in the Supreme Court.
Oh, they did lose.
The state lost in the Supreme Court.
Oh, okay. Specify, sir.
Sorry, yeah, the Supreme
Court. Their pronouns are weird.
So, the Supreme Court has already ruled that, yes, what they meant is that every right that applies to married people applies. And now the Texas Supreme Court, after that, has ruled, no, only if we say it does.
Texas is going to be a holdout for a long time. It's like Idaho.
They really are.
We don't change our minds until the feds threaten to take away our federal funding.
Mm-hmm. Because, don't take my money!
Because most conservative states end up taking more out of the pot than they put in.
Right.
It's mostly the coastal states that pay for everything.
Texas is one that pays for everything, and
Texas
yet they are
is huge, though. And that's mostly gerrymandering. Austin has 5 different representatives in it, which is why it's a liberal city with no representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, by and large, is why we started the revolution in the first place.
Well, and if you want to look at Idaho, we have Boise with 2 separate representatives.
Cut right in half.
The state has 2 representatives.
Even though we are in the bottom left-hand corner of the state...
Right.
And we have most of the population. We don't have a voice.
And the rest of the state wonders why Boise thinks we're so full of ourselves.
Right.
We're not. We're like all cities. Yeah. We are the economic center of the region. Like, there isn't another city until you get to Salt Lake or Portland. It's a long bit of desert between us and other population centers.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
We should have a voice that is at least as heavy as our weight on the state and how much we drive it, both in government and economic force and... Almost every metric, Boise is the center of the region.
Yeah.
And we don't have real representation because of gerrymandering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Texas is a very heavily gerrymandered state.
Yeah. Gerrymandering is garbage.
Ridiculously gerrymandered. Not enough to go to the Supreme Court, which still waiting to hear what they decide on that.
Oh, yeah. That will be an exciting
one. That's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
But Idaho is one where I think they have a reasonable argument to maintain it just because... There's only 2. You have to draw a line somewhere. And if you want even population, it makes sense, air quotes, to split the biggest chunk.
I don't know if logic applies to this kind of a thing. If
no.
It's decided, what you need is an apolitical group of people who just look at the numbers and decide what is equitable and fair.
Well,
and we're not going to get that.
They've designed computer systems that are non-biased. That split up states and based on a whole number of variables.
It would be interesting to see
but
how those numbers played out.
They would never. It would never make
or
it.
Instead, most of the gerrymandering we've gotten recently is computer programs designed to make it as Republican leaning as possible.
Yeah,
because they walk as close to the line as breaking the law as they can.
Yeah,
and we're only allowed to challenge it if it's so obvious, like. When they carve single houses out of neighborhoods simply to have the numbers, that's, well, bullshit. There really isn't another word for it.
Right. Yeah.
Somehow that's legal.
I want to do the next one.
Okay.
They do it.
Okay. Hobby Lobby's president and owner, Steve Green, has been using the company to purchase thousands of artifacts, including cuneiform tablets. Presumably these were for his Museum of the Bible, scheduled to open later this year.
Doing irreparable damage, as a matter of fact, according to an article I read earlier today.
Oh, yeah, yep. Because these things, I mean, they're being collected by treasure hunters, for one, who don't know how to take care of artifacts. And a lot of them have been damaged because of just where they were from.
Oh, I can imagine smuggling artifacts out of an entire region all over to this side of the planet isn't good for the artifacts.
Yeah, as it turns out, these were all smuggled artifacts from Iraq. They were all sold through a third party in the United Arab Emirates. The original seller is not known, and they were all shipped to Hobby Lobby addresses in Oklahoma City with misleading and, in some cases, flat-out false custom declarations. labels like ceramic tiles, and some claim to be from Turkey. So basically, these guys were not just smuggling, but like underhandedly smuggling.
Unethical as fuck, really. That's some, I mean, that's almost straight up Nazi art theft.
Oh, it yeah, totally that's, is. That's just exactly the what it
worst.
Is. And these one doing it for their Bible museum, which
yeah, I call Hobby Lobby Nazis. Fight me.
So he is
punch him in the face.
Punch him in the face.
Hobby Lobby is well, Steve Green is working on a museum of the Bible.
Oh, great.
Officially, they're just getting these artifacts out of the region to preserve them.
Mm-hmm.
I have done archaeology in the Middle East.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
six,
awesome.
6 weeks in Jordan. It's amazing traveling to archaeological sites with letters from the Department of Antiquities,
mm-hmm.
the Royal Department of Antiquities, saying you get VIP access. This
yes,
is so
you have VIP
cool.
access.
It was awesome.
Know.
But
it's so fun.
There are every one of those countries Nerd. There have very strict rules about the nation owns everything.
As they should. I mean, if anyone owns it, it's the people that own the land.
And to remove something, like we brought stuff back to the States, you had to get permission for each item.
Yeah.
And it remained the property of the government.
Great.
From where it came.
Unless, of course, it's coming from a region of upset.
Mm-hmm.
That we've been destabilizing for decades.
Yeah. It is presumed that a lot of these artifacts were bought straight from ISIS or ISIL.
Yeah, no, I read that. That is so crazy. Like,
so
yeah.
It's assumed, you know, they don't have any proof because they don't know who the original sellers are. But if they went through all this effort to cover up who the original seller is, you know that these artifacts were not collected legally.
Mm-hmm.
The original nation did not get any kind of
compensation
for it.
And they shouldn't get compensation. They should maintain ownership.
Yeah,
this
they need to be sent back.
Their cultural heritage.
I mean, I understand it's unstable and everything, but, and I understand that ISIS has been targeting museums and such, so I can understand a placeholdership.
I just can't imagine an argument that can be constructed where a business in the United States or an individual in the United States
yes.
should get any sort of control over historical artifacts that are about human history.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, I would rather trust like a big museum in Chicago or something
yes.
that is specialized. Like, I trust actual archaeologists with archaeology mm-hmm. because they're careful people.
Yeah.
They go in with the finest of details and they don't want to, nobody wants to
break.
It's
their livelihood. They're,
yeah.
That's what they do.
The Field Museum in Chicago can handle this kind of stuff.
Right.
The University of North Carolina can handle this stuff.
Because that's their actual job with actual doctors
yeah.
who specialize in nothing else but being like, and I mean, the joy, I think, of finding a piece of of human history that no one has ever seen before must be immense. How could you not be the most careful with that?
I named the wall that I uncovered.
That's amazing.
007, because it was the seventh wall. It was the seventh wall in this new square that we had opened up.
Maybe you guys shouldn't be in charge of naming things.
Nerd. Officially, it was Wall 7.
That's fun, though.
But I wanted to call it 007. And it was so amazing. I was just cleaning up. So I was just brushing away loose dirt. It was at the very end. I couldn't do any excavating. And I brushed a little harder because here's a stone. Here's another stone. We have two stones next to each other. This is a wall.
That's amazing.
I uncovered a wall that hadn't been seen in 2,500 years.
That's so impressive.
My eyes were the first in 2.5 millennia to see that. It was amazing.
That's impressive. And yet here we have Hobby Lobby.
Yeah.
And then we have Hobby
and then
Lobby.
On the other hand, there's Hobby
Who,
Lobby.
Who, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, is an evangelical Christian company, has been fined $3 million, which is nothing for them, and has probably, like I mentioned, has probably been funding ISIS. So,
yeah.
Way to be hypocritical, anti-American. And
but is there anything more American than funding terrorist groups in the Middle East?
Ooh, touche, sir.
Trump's education secretary, Betsy DeVos, made a name for herself and got the job by lobbying for private school voucher programs.
Right.
And, of course, by buying her posting.
And was openly admitted that's how she thought she deserved the job. Like, we've given so much money, we earned this.
Yep.
God, our country's horrible.
So, it's not surprising that in June, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops sent a letter to Congress outlining their principles for what such a program on a national scale would look like. it would spur a rebirth for Catholic education. It would push for religious freedom and flexibility. It would prioritize family satisfaction over test scores. So nice. Family satisfaction is more important, and they must be free of accountability.
Boo.
That's such a weird thing to add in.
Right.
Yeah,
as the letter,
snuck that in the end there.
As they put it in the letter, the schools, quote, must retain their autonomy, both in regards to religious identity and educational character. This independence includes, but is not necessarily limited to, control over mission-driven hiring, academically stringent admissions, and curriculum.
Yeah, here's the deal. If the feds give you money, you should expect the feds to have an opinion on what gets done with that money.
Right. Especially who you hire.
Well, whatever. Like,
and what the test scores are.
Yeah, and voucher system is pretty much one of the strongest supports for those systems, like you were saying, I think, before we started recording that. Without those vouchers, our numbers show that the school drops in population and support. So it is necessary for the voucher for them to exist. Then it should be necessary for the feds to have input on how that money is used.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
One of the biggest problems that happens with voucher programs, that is money that would otherwise be going to public schools being sent to private religious schools who get to be picky. They get better test scores and get preferred college admission because they are selective about who enters. Currently, a lot of that selectivity is based on money. And if you're a poor performer in schools, your parents are not likely to want to spend $10,000 a year for you to go to high school.
Yeah.
If you're smart, they're more likely to pay that money to give you the best education you can.
That's part of our fucked up society.
I went through private school, a lot of it with help from our local congregation, helping foot the bill. And there's also this assumption that private schools are better.
This episode has taught me a lot about you.
I still have to question things I learned in school as to, was that bullshit?
That should be a segment on your show.
That should be a segment, right?
Was that bullshit?
Penciling that in. That's a good one.
Like, you know, it's fair. Like we were talking before, I was homeschooled, and that happens when you're given a very narrow, like, non-open way of looking at the world, especially when we grew up and there wasn't as much free information access. Yeah. Like, you really kind of have to be like, is that, like, real?
Well, it's kind of, I mean, we're going to have a kid here, and this kid's going to grow up with free information, and they're going to have to learn how to figure out what's fake and what's real.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hopefully not on their own.
You guys are going to die soon?
Yeah. What? Wow.
You're raising Batman.
There. But it's the same thing. It's just doing it with too much information or not enough information.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And
it's just weird. Our education system is so screwed up.
But the biggest problem with voucher programs is they take public funds from public schools.
Right.
Which means
need it.
There is less money for public schools. And the students
who serve the biggest part of society.
Right. And the students who need the least amount of help, smart kids who don't need extra assistance, who are fine with a book on their own.
So the smart and wealthy.
Yeah. They get to leave, and that leaves the poor and less intelligent, and even more importantly, the disabled. Because special ed programs are ridiculously expensive.
Well, yeah.
And mandatory.
And federally mandatory.
Mm.
And this is taking away money that funds those. It doesn't cost $30,000 a year to educate your average or above average intelligent student. It costs $50,000 or $60,000 a year to educate a special needs kid.
It's just weird to me that how much money we have flowing through this country that we can't take for the resources we need to maximize the capability of every individual.
Military.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, obviously that would be my initial point is you could cut half the military budget and we would still be grossly overpowering every other military in the world. And imagine what you could do to our infrastructure and the investment you can make towards our country's future.
The problem is you have to have people at the head of that who would use the money the correct way.
And who have
if you get a whole ton of money being put into these charter schools, you're not helping underserved.
And as far as cutting the military budget, if you do that wrong, we're fucked. The recent cuts have all been done wrong.
Right.
It has left us with a Air Force and Navy that are basically ineffective because they haven't had the money to keep up on repairs.
But didn't Donald Trump recently say that they should go back to steam launchers on aircraft carriers and stuff like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Like, let's go back to the World War II technology.
Oh, mm-hmm. Hold on, guys. I just hurt myself rolling my eyes.
You poor...
Oh.
It's just... It's so amazing, yeah. Like, because there's that whole new... The next gen of fighter craft, the class... What was it? Class 5 or whatever, the F-22... it's
F-22 and F-35.
It's abnormally expensive and it is ridiculous. Oh, yeah. But like, it's a whole...
people are making money off of it.
Yeah, I mean, also that. Yeah, it's just it is just so frustrating.
Oh, the F-35, which may be coming to Boise, there Great. Is an active protest against it because it's going to be too noisy. I don't they think can't... it's going to be that bad.
People
I don't
acclimate
know.
To
I
noise.
Don't think they should be flying that shit right over a major city.
Portland does it.
Portland, we're not Portland
yet.
Portland flies F-16s right over black neighborhoods every day.
Okay, yeah.
Here they're wanting to fly F-35s over poor white neighborhoods.
Yeah, because that's our lower stratification.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
But the
for white city,
the F-35 is 10 years behind schedule. Two Crazy. Or three, I think billion dollars over budget on. The design.
It's 3,000 million. That's insane.
It's ridiculously... whatever the number Numbers. Is, it is way,
yeah,
way
insane.
Ridiculously over budget. And they could never kill it, which they should have done 10 years ago and started over from scratch, because it has components made in 35 different states.
The military-industrial complex so, as its roots through everything.
It has the support of 70 senators.
Yeah, no, it's just. I think it's just a cultural thing. We worship war. We mm-hmm. are built on, you know, our strength.
We're built on it.
Yeah, and it's just really difficult. Like, and this, I mean, this just all goes back to the whole idea of the idea of a nation is inherently violent.
Yeah.
And when you actually have to draw those lines and then defend those lines instead of allocating resources for the betterment of the people, like, I know it's such a sci-fi ideal and the things that I love, but ideally, if you had a charter school, it would be for your actual geniuses. Mm-hmm. And your application process would be being a genius of any economic status,
yeah.
which we would identify very early because you would be training your teachers to notice those things. And if you had someone who could read at 3 and who was doing or who was doing calculus at 9 or something, because we have geniuses that are just born there. It's ridiculous that we wouldn't then take that person, let them know their options, and help them actualize into the best thing they can be for our country.
Now, the bigger question is, why should it be a charter school?
Well,
why not
call
have
it?
A, like, for a city like Boise, have a school that specializes in special needs kids and a school that specializes in gifted children?
Yeah, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I was lucky. I grew up with a gifted program in the public school, and I got to take some classes that other kids weren't able to take, and
yeah, I took a couple of those too in elementary school.
Yeah, and they need more of that.
But why not keep it mm-hmm. in the public system?
But keep it in the public system.
If
you're not happy with the public system, get involved with it.
Well, mm-hmm. the public system should just be. I think it should just be restructured. Like, we also don't value trade jobs, which is there are mm-hmm. a lot of trade jobs that actually aren't going to go away in the next 20 years.
Right,
you're always going to need. Just simple things like
electricians,
plumbers and stuff like that. People who fix things, because that's a job that robots aren't taking for a long time.
Yep.
And it's a job that's necessary. That's a living wage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can make decent
Unions
money as a plumber. And there's no reason. Like, if I need someone to fix my toilet, I've worked on toilets. It's literally the shittiest job. Like, it's the worst. Replacing a toilet alone is one of the hardest things you can do by yourself. Like, it's so
that's
dumb.
Heavy.
It's really dumb. And why shouldn't that person, like, if that's your calling or that's something you're interested in, why wouldn't we help you get that? It's so necessary.
Yeah.
HVAC Same thing. Systems.
Yeah. I just think it's ridiculous.
So, what I always thought is that they should have programs in high school where you can go into apprenticeships for trade schools.
Why not?
Because it's in high school that kids say, hey, I really like working on cars.
Yeah. And the cars are going to be around.
No,
yeah.
I want to do art.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you're a liberal arts kid. That's fine. Here's a liberal arts track, or here's a tradesman track. And then they have and then not push this 4-year college right out of high school, but do maybe 2-year junior colleges where you get your generals out of the way, figure out what the hell you actually want to do with your life, and then go to college.
Yeah, they should just make it a lot more complex.
Well,
like from an early age on, you should be identifying your traits and strengths, and then we should be giving you options.
Which is what parents should be doing.
I think it really should involve everything. I think you should have both your teachers and your parents. Instead of a confrontational approach, which we have now, it should be everyone should be invested in what's best for this individual.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're capable of being a doctor, but would rather be an architect, and that's still within the scope of your abilities, we should help you do that. Because there's nothing wrong with having another genius architect in the country.
Yeah.
Because those are rare, and when they make stuff, we worship their works forever.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just, it's weird how we don't do that. We wait until somebody wealthy and genius gets all the things instead of finding some poor kids in the barrio and being like, well, this kid needs to be a surgeon. He's got great hands and an IQ of 167. Why can't he be a brain surgeon? But he can't because he's poor.
Or literally a rocket scientist.
Yeah.
Or...
And when we need those, like the women who did the math that got us to the moon, we need those women now. And instead of like making them fight through all the layers of everything to get to that position,
and Mikey,
we should find them.
They're called computers.
Yeah. But except we need coders.
Those women were actually called computers.
Oh, really?
And then they got replaced by computers.
Well, we also have kind of scrubbed them from the history books. Yeah, there's an individual woman whose name I have unfortunately forgotten because I've had three beers, who actually did a lot of that work in her own head. And when they had some problems...
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Right? One of us should look that up.
And for the first few... the entire Apollo program, she double-checked all the math and computers.
In her head!
Yeah.
Those geniuses are alive right now. Women just like her are little girls, and there's no reason why we shouldn't identify those people immediately. And instead of having them fight through every layer of every problem to get to where they need to be, that little girl should have a future mapped out for her. Take the stress away from her family.
Mm-hmm.
Don't force her family to find a way to get 10 grand a year to send her to high school. Let us pay for that, because as a taxpayer, what I get in the future is another genius rocket science.
Right.
And I need more genius rocket scientists in my future.
We also have an issue of, and I hate to say it, too many people are going to college right now. And going way too deep into debt.
Well, that's not even challenging. That's just a fact.
We need fewer dumb, smart kids going to college and more smart, poor kids going to college.
Right. And it goes back to the whole minimum income thing. Like, futuristically, one of the many solutions out there is just to find a way to keep people consumers and happy and a contributing member of society without them being six figures in debt. With all the health problems stress gives you, without all the decisions it takes away, you know, and it hurts our economy and our country when a whole generation of students can't afford the basic amenities of life.
And her name's Margaret Hamilton.
Thank you, Hamilton.
Thank you.
Yes, Margaret Hamilton. That's
I knew it was a presidential name. I couldn't remember who her name.
Good name.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next story.
Still, she's brilliant.
Also on education, according to a new Florida law, each school board must hire a quote, unbiased hearing officer, end quote, who will take and evaluate complaints from any resident about the appropriateness of material presented at school. If the complaint is deemed to be justified, the officer can require schools to remove the materials. This law specifically calls out material that is believed to be pornographic or that is, quote, not suited to student needs and their ability to comprehend the material presented, or is inappropriate for the grade level and age group.
You know what's awesome is that line about pornographic or not. Never had that problem in school.
It doesn't come up very often, does it?
I wonder how often that actually comes up, that they needed to make this whole...
I think it's about sex ed.
It is about sex ed. It absolutely
is. That part is targeting sex ed.
Which is
and
not
inappropriate,
pornographic.
Inappropriate for grade level and age group. Sex ed and evolution are the only things, and a couple books, The Great Gatsby.
Oh yeah, there's a little bit of that. But my mom, she grew up with a biology textbook that, you're going to show the male anatomy, you're going to show the female anatomy. Why not do it on one page with them interlocked in sexual intercourse? So she actually got to see all the anatomy and how it works, like during sex. They wouldn't allow that nowadays.
I actually found some of those books in my youth.
Yeah.
When they were still in circulation. I was a big fan of old bookstores for a long time.
That's awesome.
My parents had a original copy of the book. Was it 1,000 Questions About Sex, What You Were Afraid to Ask? It was big in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Or 80s. And it was still fun. My parents had it in an old box that I just found in one of our storage units. And it's just interesting.
Like, yeah.
We had, our sex education was what you would expect for a conservative public education system, where they didn't like to talk about it, but they went over STDs, a little bit about pregnancy. And then somebody asked about HIV and said, if, you know, how is it transmitted? In some certain, you know, I think they were asking, how is it translated anally? You can't transmit it anally, right? And the lady's like, well, wow. There's friction, which, you know, causes
lesions,
which causes blood to intermix with each other. The next day, she had to go to the front of class and redact what she had said because it was considered too inappropriate.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of inappropriate if it's accurate. Right now, preteens have access to the internet and can look it up on their own. It's not like you can protect them from this information.
No, you need to just turn safe search off.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So have a system that teaches them realistically what relationships and sexual intercourse is like. Right,
and if
now,
you don't approve of pornography, teach them why you don't like pornography. Some people feel that it, you know, women are treated unfairly in pornography. It's like, if that's your deal, then teach your kid that.
That's not what the concern is here.
But that's an ethics class, not a biology or a medical style course.
Oh, that's true.
Where we teach teenagers, like, look, I know you guys are going to start fucking soon. So what I need you guys to do is know the actual real life dangers of both STDs and STIs in pregnancy. And, you know, and then advanced classes in high school, I wouldn't even be against there being an optional course for someone to take that's actually a more advanced sex thing. Like, if you're going to be involved because of your sexuality or just being who you are, if anal sex is in your future, why not let someone who's almost an adult have access to finding out how to do that correctly, A, for the comfort of your partner, and B, to protect yourself?
No,
but we don't.
When I was in Tacoma, I had to go through Washington State Bloodborne Pathogens training.
Right.
Included in that was, and really, it was Washington State HIV training. It included the transmission rates between anal, vaginal, and oral sex. And we're talking several orders of magnitude difference between them.
Yeah.
They explained why the colon is the single most absorptive part of the body.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you ejaculate HIV-positive semen into the colon, it will be absorbed and will probably enter the bloodstream.
Right, almost directly.
Pretty much,
the membrane's like, and I only know this because I'm a bisexual male and you have to know certain things. We have gay and bisexual men have one of the highest transfer rates of those kinds of things because anal sex is a regular part of a lot of things that we do with each other. And it's amazing that this just isn't, like, I didn't know that when I was younger or even when I first came out in my 20s. Like, that stuff I had to learn on my own. And that's dangerous.
And that is dangerous.
Because even if you just assume friction and tearing and rupturing.
Yeah, it's so obvious when you spell it out.
That increases the risk several times over. You don't need that for the risk.
Right. Yeah, you really don't. And you just need to know. Like, there's certain things, like, I mean, I would even go as far as to have sexuality-specific classes that you could take or things you'd have access to.
I'm telling you, Unitarian Universalist Sex Camp.
Yeah, well, I mean, just options. You just need to know
stuff. My sister came home one day and asked, at the dinner table, why do you guys do it in the butt?
Because it feels good.
And even going with sexuality specific.
How hard is this?
Even going sexuality specific, most anal sex is happening with straight couples.
Well, yeah, but I mean, also a lot of sex is happening between straight couples.
There's more straight couples. Most anal sex, it's a woman's butt. And you don't need sexuality specific classes. Everybody needs to know this.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. But that's still just, our culture is just so weird about sex. We're weird about bodies.
Well, in my high school, we tried to have a queer club and they shut it down saying, no, you can't have that because it's inappropriate, because it's sexually explicit. And we're like, no, this is just about being queer. And if you shut us down, we're going to shut down the football team because that's also a club. That got the vice principal to shut up really quick.
Mikey.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Where can people find you?
If you're in the Boise area, there's going to be another atheist comedy experience at the very end of August and the beginning of September. Check out atheist comedy experience on Facebook and you can actually get contact with us. We do atheist shows in Boise, but we can come to your town as well. I will personally come down. We use local atheist comedians and me to bring you a really fun thing. I might be recording this one so you guys can see the what we like to do here in Boise. This will be my 8th show, which will be fun. This will come out, what did you say the day was, the 12th? So if you are actually in Portland right now, as in the 13th through the 15th or 16th, I will be performing in the First Nation, the first ever queer comedy festival is taking place in Portland, Oregon, starting the 13th and throughout the weekend. I will be on shows on Friday and Saturday. So check that out if you're in Portland and you're into queers being funny.
Nice. And who isn't?
Well, you should be. Queers are funny people.
Yes.
Awesome.
That's us, by the way, not you.
All right.
Mr. Archaeologist.
Mr. Nerd.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really have a good time here. Thank you.
And remember, fight for net neutrality.
Oh, yeah. Super important.
Otherwise, we all lose. And not all those who wander are lost. Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.